Greetings once again to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares or dares to listen. This is the Navigator, John Lash, recording at 9 in the morning on the 14th of January, 2014. This is Nav Briefing number 104, titled Pristine and Copacetic. Part 2. Before anything else, I'd like to refer to a remarkable glitch in 103. I have it written down here. What did I say at some point? Was I talking about this in 103? I guess so. Because, you know, I'm doing the Celestics talk simultaneously, and sometimes I don't know when I'm doing them. Actually, if I'm doing a briefing or a Celestics talk. Also, it appears as if I suffer from a peculiar condition at moments when I can't actually hear what I'm saying. Because if I did hear what I was saying, I would stop the tape and go back and re-record. Let's consider this for a moment. Let's consider this odd behavior of mine. In 103, at some point, I said, and I quote, "Lunar refers to the sun, solar to the moon," end quote. Now, I hope that there are a lot of people out there who are going to quote me on that. I can just see it now. Someone has set up a whole website in order to inform the world that the self-presumed cosmologist John Lash, who claims to have spent his life studying astronomy, has made this pronouncement, and then they take the two-second clip out of my talk. Lunar refers to the sun, solar to the moon. End of quote. You know, there's already a 40-second clip somewhere on YouTube citing one of my Malone interviews way back when. When I got into the borderline situation of talking about contra-violence and the use of the killing strike. That is to say, unless you don't know by now what that means, it means the use of Gaian tantric magic to actually kill someone. So there it is in that clip, a recording of my voice in which I flagrantly declare that I'd really like to knock off a woman and they're so terrible, or something to that effect. Well, I'm sure this makes a great initial impression on people who happen to come across it for the first time. And, of course, this is a risk one takes by being on the internet or by making recordings of one's words publicly available. So that 40-second clip, isolated and taken totally out of context, is certainly going to raise the shackles on the back of a few animals. And if you wanted irrefutable proof that John Lash is a psychopath who either kills women or declares with great relish that he would like to kill them, then there is the evidence, not the proof, but there is the evidence for the case against me. So I welcome any case against me, and I wish you all good luck. And just want to remind you that the day of the trickster is coming, and truth is the great trump card dealt from the deck of the trickster. So back to my recent verbal glitch, or whatever you want to call it. Let's look at this for a moment, because there may be something deeper here. There may be something deeper implied. Now, how could I possibly say this? Lunar refers to the sun, solar to the moon. And what is it? I'm not hearing myself as I'm sitting here right in this very chair pronouncing those words? Now, my friends, I invite you to make a little consideration with me about the laws of duality and doubling and the reality of living in a mirror universe. Suppose that there is a kind of law in the mirror universe that's called the law of fusion exchange. And due to this law, that sometimes an individual can be on one side of the mirror and a second later on the other, and then back on the other side again. It's kind of like shifting back and forth between the right and the left, to use the old-fashioned jargon of castaneda. Now just imagine that there's a fusion exchange going on. It's not something you can predict, it just kind of happens. And due to the laws of cosmic mirroring, when I said lunar refers to, I was on one side of the mirroring, but when I said the sun, I was on the other side, and then when I said solar refers to, and I went back to the other side. Just imagine that. I mean, look here. I mean, of course, I'm kidding. But in a way, maybe I'm not. Because we are anticipating some bizarre lessons about the nature of the mirror universe, the mirroring of the Andromedan world and our world, the mystery of the doubles, and the mystery of dreaming together. Aren't we? Those lessons and themes and motifs, and others as well, are comprised within the third great lesson of correction, which is reflected in the constellation of the twins, where Jupiter is now, currently, at this moment, performing its retrograde loop. So who knows? I'm kidding, of course. But maybe there is some evidence, by this remarkable statement of mine, of fusion exchange in action. But I can tell you, now I'm serious. I am serious. Nikki, am I serious? She has to blink three times. Okay, I'm serious. There might be further evidence that this bizarre phenomenon of slipping in a matter of microseconds back and forth from one side of the mirror to the other, from this universe to the mirror universe version of this and back to this one again, I know that there is evidence that this happens. There is irrefutable evidence that it happens, although the evidence does not explain how it happens. And what is the irrefutable evidence that fusion exchange happens? Everyone has experienced it. Everyone has encountered this evidence. I encountered it about a week ago when I did my laundry. I took my clothes out of the laundry basket, some shirts and some towels, and I put them in the washing machine, and along with the clothes, I put 5 pairs of socks. Of course, you know what's coming next, don't you? When I opened up the laundry, when I opened up the washing machine, and took out the wet laundry to hang it on the line, there were 5 unpaired socks. That's 5 for 5, my friends. Now, sometimes you can put, 6 or 8 pairs of socks in the washing machine, and only 2 of them will come out unpaired. Well, on my recent washing machine adventure, which may have been an incidence of fusion exchange, 5 single socks among the 5 pairs of socks disappeared into a parallel universe. Well, that's my theory. That is the answer to the mystery of unpaired socks. And I swear to you, funny as it is, and I hope you find it amusing, there may be something to it, because there are millions of missing unpaired socks. Billions! I remember once, about 20, 30 years ago, when I used to watch late-night TV occasionally, some comedian had a skit about unpaired socks and how he was a bachelor living alone, and when he washed his clothes, he always lost some of his socks, and they never showed up again. And he calculated how many men there were in the United States, and how many times they would wash their clothes, how many socks they possibly had. Of course, it was a fictional calculation, but it all added a kind of substance to his joke. And according to his calculation, it was like something like 3.5 million socks disappeared every week in the United States. Well, where are these socks? Imagine getting to Andromeda. And there you are in the magnificent beauty of that environment. And suddenly you come around a corner and there's a huge pile of socks. The image reminds me of the opening scene in that film. What is it called? The Prestige? It's a film about vaudeville magic with a Tesla theme woven into it. In fact, Tesla appears as a character in the film, I believe. But the film opens up with a pile of bowler hats on the ground under a tree. The camera pans over this pile of bowler hats as if they had been just thrown randomly into a pile. And you don't know what that means until later on in the film, when you find out that it has to do with a Tesla machine and the ability to clone or reproduce objects. So anyway, let's just say that the mystery of the unpaired socks belongs to the mysteries of the double and the lessons to be learned from the realm of the twins. Now, to proceed with this briefing, of course, I'm going to pick up and finally get around to describing the use of the words pristine and copacetic among the Calico War Party. But first, I'd like to address a couple of things which have come across my desk in the interim since I last recorded a briefing. I've had an email from a crew member who said to me, your nav briefings sound like you're scowling and sometimes spitting out your words like you're really pissed about something. Maybe it's just how you sound, but it comes off to me anyway as defensive and angry, end quote. Well, I was pretty surprised, a little bit surprised by this email, but I am pleased that someone can come out and accuse me of being defensive and angry, or accuse me of anything. In fact, I would have to say that I am mightily pleased when anybody affronts me in any way. And when I can learn from their effrontery, all the better. But this crew member is not affronting or offending me. She's just making an observation. And I must say, while I asked her to give me the time signature on the briefing where I sound that way so I can go listen. But I must say, short of finding out that what she says is correct, that's not at all where I'm coming from. And I don't feel angry and defensive about anything. What do I have to defend? I don't know exactly where that warp is coming from in my delivery, or perhaps is it coming from the audition of the listener? Remains to be seen. I thought I would use that little note to assure you that there's nothing threatening me, and I'm just fine. In fact, better than ever. In fact, I'm in a state of truly fabulous elation. I mean, just look at what is happening here. I can hardly keep up with the beauty and intensity of what is hitting me every moment of every day right now. We launched into 2014 with a Kali shift beginning on the 2nd. On the 3rd, I recorded The Look of the Anthropos. The crescent moon of sunset appeared in the goatfish on the western horizon. Venus had already disappeared and was moving rapidly toward her point of deepest immersion in the underworld on January 11th. So we get to that first week in January, first calendar week. 5, 6, 7, I recorded Kali's magic moment on the 8th. And just around that time, just exactly at that time, in fact, that Jupiter was opposite the Sun, which was on the 7th of January, something really, really tore loose in a magnificent way. I have never experienced until now a cycle of Dakini instruction that is accompanied by such exquisite and intense telluric vibrations. I can say that I feel at moments as if I am bathed in a blaze of a white liquid light that just flickers on my skin, plays on my skin, plays with me, licks me, before it soaks into my pores. I can say that Kalika instruction from Kali herself, although I have enjoyed it all my life in one way or another, now comes to the earth and to the realm of human animals in a flush of divine elation, which is the excitement of the warrior and the fearlessness of the warrior, that there is nothing to lose. I haven't lost anything. In fact, I've gained enormously. In the last 5 days, my life has taken an exponential amplification of power and expression. Celestics, where on earth did that come from? And how did that come out in the way it did at this moment? I had no idea 6 hours before I was going to do it that I would launch Celestics, or how it would take shape, or the immense trajectory of learning that would then be initiated. It's just astonishing. So I'm not in trouble. I'm not angry. I'm not defensive. I'm in a state of great delight and fearlessness. I am going on the offensive. I am feeling the blaze of sacred anger. And last but not least, be assured that I am not under any threats of any kind, including threats from shamanic adversaries. I use the word golpe. I believe that is the common Spanish word used in those regions of the world, such as Mexico and Peru, to refer to the strike a shaman makes, which may be a lethal strike, upon another shaman. Now, those shamans in those tribes are constantly fighting with each other, constantly putting spells on each other in those indigenous tribes in the Amazon, in Brazil, Peru, and especially in Central America and in Mexico. They're constantly squabbling with each other. Well, this is something that the shamans in the Kalika War Party are not going to do. We are not going to pick up and carry forward into correction their dirty, nasty, degenerate, and backward tribal habits. No backward tribal habits for us. And in fact, I would hope in my exposition of pristine and copacetic to explain how actually we are going to be assured that we do not allow these tribal behaviors exhibited by shamans all over the world. We don't allow them to happen in our party, and we don't allow them to weaken or disrupt the integrity of the Kalika warrior movement. It's my pleasure now to be able to show you how we can be assured and insured against such disturbances. That also is a huge lesson I have drawn from recent experiences. So there's nothing threatening me, and in any case, even if there were, don't forget that the Terma of Gaia Awakening comes with its own built-in protection. You see that protection in the figure of Dutro Lhamo, the dangerous protector of Termas and Tertons. And the power of Kali herself seals the integrity of the Shakti cluster and protects with crocodile strength, with crocodile level resistance. She protects all those who are engaged in the Sophianic vision of life and to choose to put their lives on the line to defend and protect the Anthropos, that luminous child, and all sentient beings, and the earth itself. So, no thank you, Senorita. There will not be any golpes on my plate today, but I would like a big heap of fresh Belgian baby peas smothered in butter. Oh, speaking of that matter, I know that you and the crew, speaking of eating matters, that is, I know that you and the crew take an interest from time to time to what the nav's been eating and drinking. Well, lately I've been drinking iced coffee, and I think I'm going to go on a diet of, I think I'm going to be drinking iced green tea. You see, I have to go on a rigorous program to get in shape to stand at the head of the Calico War Party and put my toe over the battle line. So I'm not really in very good shape right now. I'm not in bad shape either, but I'm not fit enough to go into battle. So I'm undertaking a rigorous diet. And since I know those of you out there who love me and enjoy me also love to hear about my bizarre eating habits, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm drinking mainly ice cream tea with honey in it and adding certain herbal extracts. Now, once in a while, maybe once a month, I'm going to hit a bottle of champagne like gangbusters. Ice cold champagne, standing on the terrace here with my cats, or maybe down at Ambergain with Jill, just to celebrate the magnificence of being alive at this moment, and just the thrill of it all. When it goes through me, I like to have a glass of champagne. And you know the old Calico joke. Why do Calicos drink more champagne than water? Because it's cheaper than water in Kali Yuga. Okay, now as to my diet. I'm considering to go on this diet for the next 2 months, leading into correction. I'm going to eat blue corn meal cornbread. To be precise, purple Peruvian cornmeal bread. Thanks to the generosity of one crew member, Holly, who was an original member of the Shakti Nexus group out of which this GNE was born, I get packages of this absolutely magnificent purple maize from Peru. Now, when you make cornbread out of this purple maize, it comes out to be as dark as chocolate and even kind of tastes like chocolate. So I'm going to bake myself this purple maize cornmeal bread, which I will slather with butter and honey. And as the second element of my diet, I'm going to be eating borscht. So, as you picture me, and I'm sure you do try to picture me, I'll send you a picture of me soon. As you picture me here in the navigator's hut, the navigator's cabin, you might picture me acquiring over the next few weeks a rather purple taint to my complexion. It's a combination of eating purple maize and borscht. So if it happens that you get a vision of me with that kind of tint on my skin, don't be alarmed. I'm not suffering from some rare disease. I'm just enjoying a combination of purple cornmeal and borscht. Another point I'd like to cover before I get back into the definition and elaboration of these two terms concerns what I'm going to call, from here on out, the satanic nexus. Now, many people who are trying to figure out what's gone wrong on this planet and where the true source of evil lies have investigated what they call the Satanic Network, and there are many different opinions and views and interpretations about what the Satanic Network actually is. I went into the Google search machine and put in Satanic Nexus, and I didn't find an entry. So I'm going to claim priority of that term. And here again, in the course of the GNE, I'm introducing new syntax into the collective discourse. Satanic Nexus. By Satanic Nexus, I mean precisely, and here is the definition, the convergence of actions of child abuse, such as sexual and physical abuse, to the extent of torture and murder, including the filming of these horrific acts, the convergence of those actions with the power structures operating at the highest levels of government, finance, law, and the judicial system. Now that's just off the top of my head. I'm going to hone that definition down to much better language. But you get the idea. Sure, we can talk about the Satanic Network, and some good work has been done. Not much, but some. Dave McGowan's good. Ted Gunderson, absolutely essential. Some other people I could name. That documentary, the repressed documentary, The Conspiracy of Silence, was a landmark piece of work in 1993-94. I still yet have to explain why that timing is significant. But it was a landmark piece of work because it did not merely speculate about a satanic network, in quotes, nor did it even present convincing evidence that such a satanic network exists, but it pointed more specifically to the satanic nexus that connects child abuse with the highest agencies of power in the land across this planet. Now you want to go to that other YouTube documentary, which begins with the word Scientology. Hold on, here it is. Scientology, the CIA, and MKUltra, in parentheses, Illuminati Mind Control. It appears under a number of titles, but it will come up under that one. And it is a 54-minute documentary. Now, you want to look at that documentary closely, because it follows up the identification of the Satanic Nexus in the suppressed documentary of the BBC of 1994. The central part of this second documentary covers the Marc Dutroux case in Belgium. I was living in Belgium when this case broke. I was living there off and on through most of the time that the case was pursued. And you will see in this documentary that one of the surviving victims of the child abuse slash pedophile ring slash torture and murder network operating in Belgium and other countries in Europe identified by name one of the highest authorities in the Belgian government, Melchior Wattelet, the Minister of Defense. Most remarkably, what happened in the Marc Dutroux case, which traumatized the entire country of Belgium, I remember it very, very well, was that it brought to the surface and broke the surface with solid evidence of the satanic nexus. See, the evidence consists of two parts. The evidence of the child abuse, in this case, a surviving witness, and the evidence that the abusers are in the highest circles of governmental power and the judiciary and the legal system. So this is not just domestic child abuse we're talking about. It's not even institutional child abuse in the Catholic Church, which is bad enough. You know, there are plenty of rumors going around the planet that the former Pope, what was his name? I can't even remember now. Ratzinger had to be pulled out of his chair because he was endangering a situation where the pedophile abuse, possibly also involving torture and murder, within the Catholic Church would have been revealed. So this scandal, if you want to call it that, let's call it what it is, this consummate horror of the satanic nexus is breaking through the membrane of denial of the human endopsyche. And I put it to you, my friends, I submit to you, I invite you to consider that when that issue, above and beyond all the other horrors we face, breaks through the membrane of denial, that is Kali's magic moment. So this is a deep subject. This is a difficult subject. But this is the breakthrough issue, the ultimate evil, as far as I can tell. And I'd like to read you from a crew member who wrote me, sharing his feelings and impressions regarding my introduction of this topic. Hi, John. Having a lot of trouble sleeping. This is from Bill, my deep ecology buddy. Have a lot of trouble sleeping. The specter of this ultimate horror is affecting me deeply. It is just huge. Even with Kali at my side, still have not yet steeled myself to view conspiracy of silence. I have gotten the gist, though, based on your distillations and the excerpts I read from the lawyer in Nebraska. Must admit, thoughts are not optimistic about confronting such entrenched evil fueled by massive sexual perversion and power addictions. Even as I begin to confront it, I find myself on the defense against powerful psychic attack. He goes on. The world looks very different. Everything is not what it seems, at an even deeper, more sinister level than previously thought. To consider this psychopathology actually props up the entire culture of consumerism and planetary exploitation. You gotta hand it to the trickster. Pure genius. Yes, I would add, Bill, pure evil genius. And there is such a thing as evil genius. He continues. It has persisted precisely because of the difficulty of even looking at it and accepting it actually happens. Even in the face of credible testimony, people will repress, deny it, just make it go away. It traumatizes. It creates so much revulsion and fear. People who might otherwise be mobilized to take action cave in to fear. Their own children might be the next and just become paranoid. Yeah, Mephisto has us by the short hairs with this one. I question, how can this information be presented globally with enough force without recourse to the mass media machine, which will create emotions useful to the perps, like more fear and feeling of helplessness? ? Most folks already have trouble distinguishing what's real from what's faked and hyped, or have numbed themselves to conspiracy theories so much that they would immediately dismiss such reports, too disturbing to consider. Short of actually witnessing such behavior in person, what can overcome this? I sense that's what we are up against, the instinct to repress and deny the existence of others' trauma is in the balance with empathy and outrage, a very tall order needing a huge boost from the earth to tip the balance. If mass mobilization does occur, the stakes are high enough that I can easily picture the global police state emerging from hiding, the start of martial law and civil war, economic collapse, and from there the game plays out in the open. Best I can do with it all at this point. May Kali's Makara skin protect us all. Thanks so much, Bill, for that message of naked honesty. Now, I'm not going to comment on this letter. It doesn't require commentary. I'm pretty sure that those of you listening will each resonate to it in your own way. The only thing that I would add is an old saying, an old adage that comes to mind. Have you ever heard this old adage, truth will out? Well, I think in Kalika terms, we can add to that little saying, another saying to complete it. Evil will out. And if you put those true sayings, those two sayings together and conjugate them, and I'm just doing this right now, spontaneously, as I'm speaking, how does it come out? Well, one permutation might be, truth will out when evil comes out. I am really convinced that the truth about the human condition cannot be found by some kind of spiritual or transcendent quest, as has been the case in the past. I am really convinced that the anticipatory comments about the end of Kali Yuga made in the Maha Nirvana Tantra were accurate. And one of these observations about what was to come, 1,000 or so years after that text was written down, was that in Kali Yuga all bets are off. None of the previous forms of spirituality work. The only kind of spirituality and transcendence and path to enlightenment that actually works in Kali Yuga is that which comes from Kali herself. And the Kalika wisdom in the Terma of Gaia awakening trumps and surpasses every preceding system. It is indeed a fantastic prospect to know that we today could be the exemplars and instruments of a unique and incomparable path and practice of spirituality on this planet, if you want to call it spirituality. I'm soon going to drop that word. But you get my drift. The Kalika teachings are unique for this time, and as the Maha Nirvana Tantra predicted, they are the only teachings that work in this time. But along with the Kalika instructions in the second part of the Terma of Gaia Awakening, as I have explained, comes the responsibility of Kalika warriors to face the gruesome and horrible truth of the human condition. As I said in the previous talk, each and every day, the world as it operates deals you a set of cards. It deals you a hand, and on every card is a horror, and like, pick your favorite horror. You know, is it going to be chemtrails? Frankenfoods, the Monsanto nightmare. What's it going to be? The financial fraud in the Fed and in the London in the banking system. You know, the so-called Kabbalist banking mafia. What's it going to be? The corruption in the media, the corruption of education, the co-optation of the university system, the complete fraudulence of the legal system. The massive fraud perpetrated on humanity by maritime law, which is nothing but an archonic gatekeeper game by which they trick you into giving your consent when you don't. What's it going to be? Pedophilia? Child abuse in the Catholic Church? Child abuse in homes? Rape? Rape of women? Race war? Every day, the world as it operates deals us all a hand full of cards of horror. And I say to you that there is one ultimate horror. And if the whole human species could focus on that, then all the rest would fall into place. And I am giving a name to that horror in this briefing, the Satanic Nexus. The expose of the Satanic Nexus is Kali's magic moment. Can I predict the timing in which this might happen? Or can I outline the timing? I don't predict, as you know. Can I outline the timing in which this might happen as we move toward correction? I most certainly can. You can follow it degree by degree in the retrograde cycle of Saturn. Saturn turned retrograde, or will turn retrograde, in the first week in March, and it will reverse its motion back across the vertical beam of the scales. You can't observe that in the sky. You have to picture the beam to observe that Saturn is crossing the beam, but you can observe the retrograde motion of Saturn, okay? Combination of observation and picturing. It goes all the way back to 17 degrees of Scorpio on the 21st of July, then turns direct again. And around September 21st of 2014, it once again stands in direct alignment to the vertical beam, the vertical axis of the scales. And I would say to you that shortly after correction begins, in March of 2014, 3 months later, 90 days later, from March 21st to September 21st, it's when the engagement happens. It's when the full warrior engagement happens. And may well be the period of timing that brings the world to Kali's magic moment. So while the Kalika War Party engages from its 16 different positions, various fronts, in the battle against those who are not in correction, the entire population of the world, societies all around the world, in one way or another, can be directed into the battle with us. They can support our ranks even though they don't know that we exist. And they can do that more strongly and more massively if they become aware of the problem of the Satanic Nexus. It's not just a problem of child abuse. You see that now, don't you? It's a problem of the use of child abuse as a tool of political control and extortion at the highest levels of power. All right, about half an hour to go. So with all that said, let's focus now exclusively on these two terms. I introduce these terms specifically to those in the Kalika War Party or those who would consider to join. And I want to invite you to consider that we have the privilege of using these terms among ourselves in a special way, in a private way, if you will. And I also want to propose that our confidence as a warrior party may depend, crucially, on the use of these terms, not merely as terms or as jargon, but actually living them in a lucid and consistent manner. Now, the word pristine, of course, means impeccable, clean, perfect, without flaw, without a hitch, without conflict, that which is pristine, like beautiful, like the taste of fresh rainwater, which has no foreign elements in it, no pollution. The pure elixir of rainwater or spring water is pristine. The word pristine occurs often in Tibetan Buddhism. Some of you may realize that. In fact, there is an expression in Tibetan Buddhism called pristine cognition. Pristine cognition. This term from Tibetan Buddhism is widely applied to five particular kinds of cognition that are associated with Buddha forces, Buddha apertures of enlightenment within the human mind itself. There are many ways to paraphrase what the Buddhists, the Tantric Buddhists of Tibet, have to say about pristine cognition, and they've got a lot to say about it. They've probably written thousands of books on this subject. Primarily, I'll give you my paraphrase. What they say is that the Buddha wisdom and the awakened awareness within the human mind breaks through the human mind and comes into your ordinary mind and becomes your own in a manner that might be compared to a massive beam breaking through your head, a massive beam of light. And there are particular five massive beams of light, which are called the five pristine cognitions, and they are characterized and described in literally hundreds of different ways in Buddhist teachings. Now, there's a Tibetan word, the original basis of the English word pristine cognition, and that Tibetan word is spelled like this, Y-E space S-H-E-S. I don't know how to pronounce this transliterated word. I've used it for many years, but I have never really learned from someone who would know how to pronounce it. So I pronounce it Yishe, as if it were spelled Y-E-S-H-A-Y. I pronounce it Yishe. I first used this word a lot on Infinity Ridge. I used to say Yishe up there a lot. One of the first things I learned about communicating directly with the aeons of fire was that she responds to Yishe. You can't just ramble or say anything aloud or in your mind because you won't get her attention. You get her attention by formulating Yishe, by formulating a pristine cognition. So, the language that you use in addressing her must be pristine. So for a long, long time now in my life, the word pristine has been associated with shamanic practices in Tibetan Buddhism, and more particularly, since 2002 or so, with the practice of direct communication with the wisdom goddess in telestic trance. Now I'm going to expand the significance of this word, and I'm going to give it an existential value. I'm going to bring it into the existential dimension. How do I do that? Well, I propose to you who are listening to me, whether you already are actively engaged in the Kalika War Party or are disposed to join, to consider that our relations in the War Party can be pristine. That is to say that individual members of the party within their own ranks and in cross-rank communications and interactions can be pristine. We can all be pristine with each other. Now, what does it mean to be pristine? What does it look like? What does it feel like? How can I describe it? Well, quite simply, interactions among members of the Kalika War Party, when they are pristine, are without blockage or impediment, without judgment, and without limit. And they are pure and clear and free and open. That is to say, the relationships, the feelings, the communications, the words exchanged, the looks exchanged, have not one single impeding element in them. Everything goes like blazes, like two figure skaters who bring off a flawless performance. Their motions perfectly coordinated. That is pristine. Pristine is the perfect and impeccable coordination of will, of intention, passion, an intelligence. It is the perfect alignment in word and deed of the Calico Warriors. We can be pristine. Pristine just happens. You don't get to pristine, by the way. This is another thing that I have to point out. You know, the Tibetans talk about non-elaborated thought. What that means is that you have a thought, but you never did anything to earn it. It just comes fully elaborated, and it's lucid and elegant and lapidary in its construction, and it cannot be altered or improved. Love and the supernatural operate on the same frequencies. That is a pristine syntax. I didn't think that up. I didn't ponder it. It just came to me in that way, which is the manner of Dakini instruction. Because Dakini instruction from Kali or whomever it might be among the Mahavidyas or the Diamond Sky Dakinis is simply the spontaneous emergence in your own mind of the Buddha nature of your mind operating cognitively. You see, enlightenment is not independent of thought and language. This is one of the wonderful messages of one Buddhist sutra that I happen to like very much. You know, there are only 5 Buddhist sutras that you have to read. I'm not talking about Tibetan Buddhist sutras now. I'm talking about Mahayana sutras. There are only 5 of them that you have to read. You can chunk all the others in the garbage. And one of them is the Vimalakirti Nirdesha Sutra. I just absolutely love this sutra for a number of reasons. The Vimalakirti Nirdesha Sutra. It's remarkable in one respect because it is known to be, in Buddhist tradition, the only sutra or discourse delivered by the Buddha to a layman. Now, of course, this is just scuttlebutt. You know, this is just landlubber scuttlebutt. I mean, it's just folklore. But it does give a distinguishing trait to the Vimalakirti Nirdesha Sutra that the historical Buddha, Siddhartha, stopped his discourse to the crowds of monks, which didn't exist in his time because there was no monastic Buddhism, and just turn around and talk to an ordinary person. And so he delivered this sermon, this discourse, to an ordinary layman. And one of the points that Siddhartha makes in this discourse is that the action of enlightenment, the action of the enlightened person, is not independent of speech and language. Try to register that. There is a huge prejudice, you know, when people approach enlightenment, when they start to look around and seek for some kind of cosmic consciousness based on a presumption of the higher mind, etc., etc., okay? Typically something happens. You're told that the ultimate truth is inexpressible. Well, let me tell you something, my friends. The ultimate truth, the ultimate state of realization of your own mind is inexpressible, but it is infinitely expressive. You don't reach or attain, to use the fashionable word, you don't attain the ultimate realization of your own mind without realizing that your mind is not your own, but that it is an infinite resource of expressiveness for you anyway. And this is a message that comes through in certain passages of the Vimalakirti Nirdesha Sutra. So going back now, returning to the word pristine, we understand that among the members of the Calico War Party, both within the single ranks and across ranks, we can express ourselves to each other with infinite variety, with infinite diversity, in brilliance, in lucidity, in hysterical, screaming humor, in pathos, in tragedy. We have an unlimited range of diversity and expression, one to the other, delivered and received in a pristine fashion. Pristine means there's no flaw, there's no glitch, there's no conflict, there's no offense, there's no misunderstanding. The interactivity within the party is pristine from the first moment that we meet. You don't get to pristine expressiveness by working your way there. Nor do you get there in stages. You just show up there, and then the practice is seeing how you can sustain it. I've said this before. This is an absolutely fundamental principle of planetary tantra. There is no scale or hierarchy in planetary tantra. It is a non-progressive path of total immediacy. So this immediacy, this lucidity together, this brilliant, loving, daring, lucid, fearless flash of one look to the other, this solidarity of knowing that we are united by the sorcery of love and intention, we are an infallible and invincible band of warriors, comes instantly and immediately in the pristine spontaneity of that power of which we are the human and animal instrument, the power of the wisdom goddess herself. Her initial conditions are perfect. And you, as the witnesses of those initial conditions, are also perfect in those conditions. Perfect and pristine. Great, you say. All sounds wonderful. Wouldn't it be great if it could be that way? Well, it is that way, my friends. I experience it that way a lot, and more. If you ever get a chance to be around me, you'll see, maybe, that it is immediately that way. We immediately click, and the clicking is infallible. It's an infallible click. It's an infallible match. And it's lucid and fearless and clear as rainwater. So we can be pristine. We must be pristine in our interactions in the warrior party. But can we also be copacetic? Because being pristine is not enough. Being pristine is more or less a given. I really wish with all my heart, I wish for you that you would come to know the truth of what I just said. Being pristine is a given. But being copacetic, that's something that needs to be learned and needs to be acquired and attained by practice. So what does it mean to be copacetic? Well, you know, this word came to my mind just a few days ago, around the 6th or 7th of January. It came into my mind, flashed into my mind at the moment when I found myself in a tremendous rush. It was at the first quarter moon of the Kali shift. I found myself in a blaze of manic beauty, in a blaze of elation. And during the 2 days of that first quarter of the shift, I got so much intel from Kali that I was flooded. I didn't even try to write any of it down. I have to rely now on my powers of retention to see if I can bring it back and reintroduce it into language, you know, to bring it back and bring it up into language again, which just flashed through me like white lightning, like sweet white liquid fire. And it has the flash of anger on it, the flash of anger on this sweet white light, and you can taste it on your tongue. I'm delirious and hysterical with the power of a Kalika warrior that burst upon me in these last few days. And in that burst, in that flush of elation and furor, pops up this word. Well, I'll tell you something odd. I don't think I've thought about this word since the days way back when I used to read Mad Magazine. To the best of my memory, I first encountered the word copacetic in Mad Magazine. I mean, this is mad. I mean, this is a mad allusion to Mad Magazine. Now, I haven't read Mad Magazine since I was about 14 years old. And maybe that wasn't where I first came across this word. And maybe that I came across it somewhat later, maybe in my teens, when I took a great interest in jazz, you know, and improvisational jazz and things like that. And I love jazz, certain kinds of jazz. And if I'm not mistaken, the word copacetic may belong to the genre of American jazz scene. Like the word, you know, like hipster jargon, you know, hipsters. Not hippies, hipsters. So, you know, you have the expression, that's a gas, or let's jam. You know, these are the kinds of expressions used by jazz musicians. And it's possible that the word copacetic comes from that genre as well. Anyway, I was curious about it, so I looked up the word copacetic on the internet. I found the most incredible entry. Let me read you just a little bit of this. I was like completely dumbfounded when I found this entry. And if this doesn't blow your socks off, or maybe just one of them, leaving you with one unpaired sock on your foot, then I don't know what will. It says here, one suggestion that's commonly put, there's a whole entry on copacetic, by the way. It's in a site called worldwidewords.org. One suggestion that's commonly put forward is that copacetic was originally a word of the African-American community in the USA. The name of Bill Bojangles Robinson, a famous black tap dancer, singer, and actor of the period around the turn of the 20th century, is commonly linked to this belief about its origin. Indeed, he claimed to have invented it as a shoeshine boy in Richmond. But other blacks, especially Southerners, said later that they had heard it earlier than Mr. Robinson's day. But Bojangles certainly did a lot to popularize the word. Okay, that's one paragraph in this entry. Now, I really like that. I mean, we're going great here. You know, Kalika jargon coming from a black shoeshine boy in Richmond. Can't get any better than that. Okay. Now, this next paragraph I'm going to read in its entirety is the one that really blew one of my socks off. Quote, a more frequent explanation is that copacetic derives from one of two Hebrew phrases, hakol beseder, all is in order, or kol bezedek, all with justice. It is suggested these words were introduced in the U.S. by Yiddish-speaking Jewish immigrants. Yet other accounts say it derives from a Chinook word, copacine, everything is satisfactory, once used on the waterways of Washington State, or from the French coupé-cétique, from coupé, to strike, or from the French phrase copain, c'est épatant, buddies, that's great, or in a hugely strained derivation, from the cop is on the settee. supposedly a hoodlum term used to describe a policeman who was not actively watching out for crime, and so one who was okay or copacetic. Now, what can I say? I mean, there is so much fun in this paragraph, and these allusions are just really astounding. You know, what do you find in here but a reference to the French word coupé, to strike? And you know, the French word coupé is the equivalent to the Spanish word golpe, G-O-L-P-E, referring back to the topic of a shaman's strike. I could just play with this paragraph for days, but since I only have 10 minutes left in this briefing, I'd like to direct your attention to the Hebrew references. Lordy, lordy, lordy. If only Mrs. Calabash were here, she would serve up an extra slice of pumpkin pie to the navigator for having discovered this particular piece of intel. Hakod Seder, meaning all is in order, might be a Jewish Yiddish term that morphed into copacetic. But what about Kol Bezedek? K-O-L space B apostrophe T-Z-E-D-E-K. Well, my friends and readers of Not in His Image, there you have it. That word, tzedek, is a variant among about half a dozen variants of the Hebrew word for justice or righteousness, tzedek. Now, don't you think it's remarkable that the word copacetic, flashed into my mind, and that this internet entry turns up the word tzedek? I call this a tantric moment of linguistic metamorphosis. Because what we're seeking to understand and to apply and practice in the word copacetic is not the act of bringing everything to justice and acting righteously with each other, but it's exactly the opposite. It means to accept injustice and a lack of righteousness, a lack of being right, and a lack of behaving in the right way among ourselves. To be copacetic means to get along with our differences and conflicts, and to be okay that we offend and hurt and discount and disrespect each other in certain ways on certain occasions. Copacetic has to go with pristine, because it's just not realistic that everything in our party could be pristine. Copacetic means I can hurt your feelings and you can hurt mine, as long as we both can get over it. Copacetic means not that I can abuse you, because there is no liberty for abuse in the Calico War Party, but I can treat you in a brutal way at moments, what appears to be a brutal way, and you'll get over it. And you can do the same to me, and I will get over it as well. And when we get over our differences, and our effronteries, and our offenses, and all the other things that separate people in communication, then we're copacetic. So if you ask me how I'm getting along with a friend with whom I had some troubles because we clashed, or because that friend be it a man or woman, hurt my feelings, or offended me in some way, or vice versa. And if you ask me, as one member of the war party, how I'm getting along with that member, I would like to be able to say, hey, we're copacetic. To be copacetic, if this is actually achievable, my friends, it is a challenge, and I put this challenge to you now. To be copacetic would be an absolute triumph over the fickleness and egotistical crap that infects the human condition. It would be a triumph of human relationships to be copacetic. It means that we don't have to like everything about each other. We don't have to get along 100%. We don't even have to respect each other in all and every and each and every little damn thing. Or even in some big things. And it means, paramountly, that we can get over whatever comes up that might divide us and turn us against each other. I declare to you now, loud and clear, and in a warrior's tone of confidence, something that you already know. It is absolutely impossible to expect any human animals to get along without stepping on each other's toes and offending each other and acting disrespectfully in one way or another. It is a pathetic and ridiculous illusion to think that we're going to be able to join in this party and not clash. We will clash. We will clash as personalities. We need to clash. What I would offer to you now as a standard of behavior for everyone in the Calico War Party is that you would hold yourself to the standard of honest and fearless self-expression, no matter the consequences. That's only possible in any human society, in any family, in any tribe, in any circle of friends. Such unlimited, uninhibited self-expression would only be possible upon the agreement to get over whatever it is that affects you, to get over it together and be copacetic. Any activity involving the gathering together of human animals is doomed unless it is understood going in that you are going to clash and that it's all right to clash and offend and even hurt each other deliberately and not deliberately as long as you can get over it together. And it's in getting over it that you become copacetic. Now, I think it's astonishing that it's possible that the Hebrew word zedek or zadik, retained in some Jewish version, might appear in a phrase that presents the origin of copacetic. And if that is the case, and if the term just or righteous, which is zedek or zadik, is hidden in copacetic, then it tells me that this is indeed an extremely powerful word. One of the things that is dangerous about the term zedek or zadik is it is one of the most dangerous terms that has ever been introduced into the human language or into human language, initially in the Hebrew language. What is so dangerous about it is that it carries the presumption of the perfection of human behavior. The tzaddik in traditional Hebraic culture is the perfect one, the ultra-righteous, the one who is just and who therefore stands above all other human beings, holding the highest measure of humanity. And anyone who does not rise to that measure of tzaddik is somewhat less than human. This is the ultimate presumption of human insanity. There is no such thing, and there never can be. It is an insane call to perfection. The expectation of that perfection, however, is not limited to the Zadokite cult of the Jews. Every single human being on earth, insofar as he or she acts as a social being, carries that presumption subliminally. Can you see what I'm getting at? You and I carry that presumption of tzaddik subliminally when you enter into any relationship, either personal or social, on the presumption that you can behave perfectly, righteously, and in an absolutely just fashion. Nobody ever can act in that way. So there is the opportunity with the word copacetic to turn the Jewish concept of tzaddik around in a tantric act of turnaround, sutaka, the act of rendering, and to render this concept and this assumption and presumption that there can be human behavior between human animals without conflict or fault or error, to turn it absolutely around and turn it into the practice that leads to being copacetic. What that practice is, you yourselves can construct. You yourselves can develop and discuss it among yourselves, as I do each day now, as I will do in every single human engagement for the rest of my life. Kali's instruction is liberating. And in transmitting Kali's instruction to you here today, by paraphrase, I liberate you from any reticence to express yourself totally and without inhibition to every single person that you meet in any way that you like. And then see how they handle the consequences. And see how you, in turn, handle the consequences of their handling the consequences. That is how to practice becoming copacetic. Complete, fearless freedom of self-expression is the bottom line of participation in the Kalika War Party. You can say anything you want to anybody else, and let the chips fly where they may. But the agreement, the responsibility that comes with that freedom of self-expression is that you will stay around to get over it with the other person and become copacetic. One of these days, you're going to see a NAB briefing with the title, Good to Go. But I can't do that briefing until we advance from where we are today by enmeshment in the cheap glorifications of power and egotism that permeate the human condition. Cheap glorifications of the ego. To be righteous, to be offended. This is cheap tactics of division. that occur all the time among human beings. Oh, don't offend me. Listen to this. You can offend me anytime you like, and I invite you to do so. But then, as the price of the freedom to offend me, if you will, as the responsibility that goes along with it, you are required to stick around and watch me get over it. And I can get over offense in a New York second. How long is it going to take you to become copacetic? When a sufficient number of members of the party have reached the state of freedom, behavioral freedom, existential freedom, where we can together be both pristine and copacetic, then I can do the NAV briefing that has the title, Good to Go.